Good morning, dear devotees. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. We're going to read and continue on Brihad Bhagavatamrita, chapter 4. And I'm going to do things a little differently today, but I'll explain after I read the verse. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Technically, the next verse is chapter 4, text number 30, technically. But I'm going to read verses 40 and 41. Maybe even 42, 43. I'll read the verse in purport, and then I'm going to go back and summarize the text from 30 to 41. Rather than just read the verses and the commentaries themselves, I've just written a little summary, and we're going to discuss the summary of the verses. So we'll read text 42 and 43 first. Tatapi bhavato brahman prampanchantar gatasya hi prapancha parivarantar drishtigarbhitachetasa tadjishtanta kulinaiva tat tat syad vaditam sukam tatet yuchita yat kanchit tad agaksha matam hari. Translation. Nonetheless, my dear Brahman, you are a resident of the material world and your intelligence is confined because you can see only matter. Therefore, I say it is like this, so that by material examples, you might understand various things more easily. May Lord Hari forgive this offense. Commentary. An attempt to describe spiritual existence in material terms is, strictly speaking, inappropriate and impossible. Yet, if a conditioned soul can be even a little attracted by words evoking some of the glories of Vaikuntha, and if he can be encouraged to take up the task of spiritual development, the impossible can indeed become possible. Any honest attempt to enlighten the conditioned soul with Vaikuntha consciousness is worthwhile and praiseworthy. Even though our thinking may now be covered by concepts of matter and conditioned life, pure Vaishnavas can guide us gradually to transcendental understanding. We know from ordinary experience what a king is. So if we can... Did I read the wrong verse? Yes, I did. Okay. We know from ordinary experience what a king is. So if we can further appreciate the personality of Godhead as the Supreme King, we have begun to understand his glories. I was going to read 40, 41. I'll go back and read that too. Sava prapancha tatitanam tesham vaikuntavasinam tasya vaikunta lokasya tasyantan nayakasya cha tani mahatmya jatani Prapanchantara Gatakila Drishtantara Nopayujante Nashankyante Chabubhasitam. The residents of Vaikuntha transcend everything material. For persons within the material world, material creation, the manifold glories of those residents and of the Vaikuntha world and its master are beyond analogy and beyond the power of words to describe. Commentary. Normally, the varieties of life forms in any realm indicate a vast hierarchy of relative superiority and inferiority, as Gopakumara saw among the residents of heaven. Such a hierarchy might seem out of place in Vaikuntha, where everyone should be equal on the platform of Satchidananda. Gopakumara wants to explain carefully to his student the real situation, but is afraid of committing offenses by applying material examples to the transcendental reality of Vaikuntha. Therefore, he first gives a disclaimer. Comparisons to things of the known world may help neophytes begin to understand the spiritual world, but can never do full justice to that higher reality. Since the categories of spiritual existence are totally different from those of the material world, spiritually immature intelligence has no power to comprehend them directly. Om Agyana Timarandasya Garanjana Salakaya Chakshu Unminitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Ukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurundina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Saman Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shanyavari Pastya Chade Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We're going to cover, as I said, many verses which give us a little indication of what takes place in Vaikuntha. Who resides there? What do they look like? What do they do? It's a description which is not very much detailed, at least in Bhagavatam. The one reference of Vaikuntha that I recollected while I was reading this today, was Lord Brahma's description of Vaikuntha to the demigods. When the demigods came to Lord Brahma to make an appeal about what was happening in the universe, and they were overwhelmed by the darkness which prevailed, and usually under such circumstances, when the demigods are disturbed by such situations, they go to Brahma for an explanation and assistance. And then at that particular point, Lord Brahma, in his response to the demigods, began describing his sons, the four Kumaras, and specifically about their travels, and how they happened to come upon, in the course of their travels, Vaikuntha. And we've already discussed a lot of that, and I'm not going to go back and explain all what happened at the gates of Vaikuntha with the four Kumaras. But nonetheless, when he was speaking to the demigods, he did give a description of Vaikuntha. And there are several verses which describe a lot of the characteristics of Vaikuntha, which are very similar to what we'll read here in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And so that was one place that I recalled, which I felt was a good description in the Bhagavatam. And it was very interesting. There's one verse that just as after Lord Brahma, and I'm going to read some of those verses, just after Lord Brahma describes Vaikuntha to the demigods, and of course, his qualification is because Vaikuntha was revealed to him. We spoke about that before in the previous chapter, how the vast expanse of Vaikuntha was revealed to Lord Brahma when the Lord appeared to him as a result of his penance and austerities. But there is one verse and which states at the end of this description, he says that it is very much regrettable that unfortunate people do not discuss the description of the Vaikuntha planets, but engage in topics which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence. Those who give up the topics of Vaikuntha and take to talk of the material world are thrown into the darkest region of ignorance. Therefore, I took that verse in of itself as an impetus to take some time to discuss Vaikuntha. Yet these two verses, which I just read, which was Gopakumar's address or speaking, when his narration, excuse me, to the Mathura Brahman about Vaikuntha, he's specifically saying that I'm going to have to use, in describing Vaikuntha, I'm going to have to use terms, concepts, personalities, and I'm going to have to describe things in a way to you so that they're within your realm of experience. But actually, to try to do something like that is an offense. And therefore, I'm praying to Lord Hari to please forgive me for this offense, because there's no comparison. And he's making that point, you know, very clear in these verses. There's no way to compare them. It's, you know, in English, we use the expression apples and oranges. You know, how do you compare them? But it's, of course, that's a bad comparison too. Because they're both material. They're material elements. They're material objects. But how do you describe the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, by using even terminology that, which in many respects will be related to mostly within our realm of experience in the material world? And the point that he's making, I'm doing it because if I can somehow invoke in you, this is again Gopakumara speaking to the Mathura Brahman, if I can somehow invoke in you an interest, if I can invoke in you some interest, then at least that will be proper utilization of these examples I'm going to give. Because if you discuss these topics of Vaikuntha, as Lord Brahma told the demigods, you should talk about these topics of Vaikuntha, because if you don't talk about the topics of Vaikuntha, then you'll talk about mundane subject matters and at least get started. Now, of course, as we know, we have topics beyond Vaikuntha to discuss. Fortunately, Srila Prabhupada has given us Srimad Bhagavatam. He has given us the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we have Chaitanya Charitamrita. Srila Prabhupada has benedicted the world with Chaitanya Charitamrita. We can speak about that place which is beyond Vaikuntha. And we can, by discussing such topics, which we will eventually get to in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it will be able to reveal to those followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Goloka Vrindavan and the mood of devotional service, which is engaged in by the residents in Vrindavan, that is the most attractive topics to discuss, and they're completely transcendental, beyond the modes of material nature. But there are some who are captivated by these descriptions of Vaikuntha. Otherwise, why does the Lord assume the identity of Vaikuntha not? he would just skip Vaikuntha and just, you know, and then just Goloka. But why is Vaikuntha there? And why is Vaikuntha not there? Because there are persons who are attracted to the regal descriptions of the Lord of Vaikuntha, as he sits upon a throne, and how he's worshipped, you know, by chamaras, and an umbrella is held over his head, and the goddess of fortune is rendering service, massaging his feet and performing all kinds of services to satisfy the Lord. And who is the goddess of fortune? She's an expansion of Srimati Radharani manifested in Vaikuntha. But why is she there? Because there are some personalities who are attracted to that feature of the Lord. And even the goddess of fortune, interesting, it just came to my mind, that even the goddess of fortune, when she tried and she performed austerities for thousands of years, she wanted to try to associate with Krishna in the rasa dance, and yet she wasn't able, and she's still performing austerity, she wasn't able to enter into the rasa dance because she couldn't give up the conception of being Krishna's wife and as serving him in that mood of as the goddess of fortune in Vaikuntha. So obviously, the Lord appears in Vaikuntha because he wants to satisfy those devotees, those pure devotees, analoi devotees, who are situated in ecstatic love for the Lord, but who are attracted to this particular feature of the Lord. Now, we're going to hear, and the reason why I'm starting with this introduction, is we're going to hear some really far out descriptions of what goes on in Vaikuntha, and some of it may even be a little bit bewildering, and an attempt to try to grasp it may be very difficult. And that's why we even read in a previous, from Laghu Bhagavatamrita, we read one verse where Rupa Goswami says in his description of Vaikuntha, basically what he says, oh philosophers, don't try to argue or try to understand. Best you just try to accept these descriptions and as they are. Because if you try to completely comprehend with mundane mind, mundane senses, it's best just to accept. So that's another verse we read. I can't remember if it was last time or the time before, but we did read it. It was in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, and Rupa Goswami specifically quoted that. I believe it was from Padma Purana, because Rupa Goswami uses a lot of verses from Padma Purana in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. And so we're going to read, and I'm going to summarize. I'm not going to read them. I'm going to summarize some of these descriptions about what Gopakumar saw at the gates of Vaikuntha. Well, let's get beyond the gates. I want to get beyond the gates today. We spent a lot of time at the gate. I don't know if Gopakumar spent this much time at the gate, but we spent a lot of time at the gate. So that's why I'm going to summarize about 10, 11 verses, of which were observations that Gopakumara made at the gates of Vaikuntha when he saw all these residents of Vaikuntha coming in from wherever they had been, and all of them just entering freely. They didn't need any special airplanes to bring them in from another place because they have their own airplanes. That's one of the benefits of being a resident of Vaikuntha. They have their own airplanes, and their airplanes are part of their retinue. They're part of their paraphernalia. And this one description here, I'll tell you what it is now, but it's really mind-blowing that some of them, they come in with all their opulences and all their paraphernalia. I mean, a lot of it, some of them. And they want to go in themselves without their opulences. So what they do is, you know, they come in with all their opulences, and then they just absorb them all into their bodies and go in empty-handed. And Gopakumara is going to see this. This is another mind-blowing event for Gopakumara, which evokes his, you know, his awe and reverence about these personalities. But some of them do that. Some of them bring them in with them, and they do whatever they want to do because it's all in service to Vaikunthanath, the Lord of Vaikuntha, and it's all according to what, you know, what their particular mood is at the particular time. But it's evidence is given again and again and again that these Vaikuntha residents have no selfish and inclinations whatsoever, and they're all equal in the sense that, as we read in this verse, there's no hierarchy. There's no hierarchy. There's no like, oh, I'm better than you, and these persons are better. Especially, we have to understand there's no hierarchy when we begin to hear how the different forms that the Vaikuntha residents they take on. So that's an introduction. And although I did read two verses, but I tried to summarize those two verses by simply explaining that we can't fully comprehend these descriptions that we're going to hear and that which the mature Brahmin heard from Gopakumara. And he, as he said, he begged forgiveness for using examples within our realm of, within the materialistic minded person's realm of experience to describe Vaikuntha. There's just no way to describe it. There's no way to compare it, but he's going to try in order to invoke in him a sense of reverence for Vaikuntha. So I'm going to read something that it's a summary I put together of the verses between text 30 and 43. And I'm not going to read the verses themselves. If you want to read the verses, you can always go back and read text 30 to text 43. I'm summarizing them, and I'm including in my summary some of the points which are brought up in the commentaries, and I'm also including some of my own points as well, but not much, about what Gopakumara is telling the mature Brahmin about what he saw at the gates of Vaikuntha. So some were carrying, we already described what some of them were doing before. Some appeared to be more opulent than others. And in each person that appeared before, we described how Gopakumara had the particular impression that this person must be the Lord of Vaikuntha. And of course, it was revealed by that person in genuine humility, I'm not the Lord of Vaikuntha, I'm simply a servant. And they said various things to Gopakumar to try to get him from suggesting that they were the Lord, including bite your tongue, as we spoke about last time. Don't say things like that. This is not appropriate. I don't need to hear things like this, and you don't need to say things like this. So, more. Some were carrying umbrellas, chamaras, and other paraphernalia. Now, of course, umbrellas and chamaras and all kinds of paraphernalia are generally used for worship. And whenever you see an elaborate worship performed with great reverence, generally you'll see an inclusion of chamaras being offered, umbrellas being overhead. And what I thought of course, it's not Vaikuntha, but it made me think of when the demigods and Indra, after Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill and Indra came back with Airavata, and then they did the coronation of Krishna in Govardhan, and the Krishna was given an abhishek with milk from the trunk of Airavata, and all the demigods were there, and all the paraphernalia. I think Vayuna was there, and he was holding a parasol, and another demigod was there holding Surya was fanning the Lord with a chamara. And of course, it was a reverential form of worship that the demigods were doing, using all these different types of paraphernalia to worship Krishna, because that was their conception of Krishna, that he was worthy to be worshipped as such. And then it made me think of that pastime, because then when the demigods finished their worship and then they left, and just as they were leaving, Krishna's cowherd boyfriends were coming, and they just left all the royal paraphernalia there. The chamara was there. The elephant, I mean, the umbrella was there. The ghee lamp was there. All the articles for reverential worship were there. And the cowherd boys saw all this and said, "Hey, Krishna, what's all this? Where'd this come from?" You know, they just couldn't figure it out. You know, like, you know, this is all meant for you know, some very important worship of a very important personality. But, you know, and Krishna didn't want to say anything. He didn't want to say where it came from. He didn't want to tell them, you know, what happened. So the cowherd boys just spontaneously said, "Well, it's all here. Why don't we just use it for Krishna?" So, of course, their worship of Krishna wasn't in the same reverential mood as was the demigods. But my point is that all this type of paraphernalia is usually used for reverential worship. And therefore, these personalities who were returning, they were carrying umbrellas, chamaras, and all other kinds of paraphernalia, even weapons. And we already talked about why there's weapons and why there's an army and everything else. I'm not going to go there again. But I seem to recall when the four Kumaras appeared at the gates of Vaikuntha, and when Lord Narayan came to the gates of Vaikuntha, he was surrounded. He had Lakshmi, she was there, and other servants were there with chamaras and umbrellas. And it was, you know, again, displaying the method of worship that generally takes place in Vaikuntha. Okay, so they were carrying umbrellas, chamaras, and other paraphernalia. They were performing similar services. Their minds and senses were eagerly absorbed in their respective services. This is simply to indicate that each devotee, the service which he's rendering, is totally captivated his mind and senses completely. And the service is rendered, although reverentially, it is performed with full absorption. Not only full absorption, but they were all intently absorbed in their respective services, as described here. It's also described that the ornaments, because they're wearing different ornaments on their body. I think it's described also in Lord Brahma's description of the residents of Vaikuntha, how they have armbands, golden armbands around their arms. They have golden wristbands. They're wearing all kinds of jewelry and paraffin. All these residents of Vaikuntha are ornamented. But it's described, and it's interesting how it's described that the ornaments, the beauty of the ornaments are enhanced by the beauty of their bodies. It's also given as an example of Krishna. When Krishna wears ornaments, all the ornaments he wears, the beauty is enhanced by Krishna's beauty. But because these residents of Vaikuntha have forms similar to the Lord of Narayan, same thing. The ornaments that they wear, their beauty is enhanced. They were glorifying the Lord with choice prayers and hymns. We already discussed that before about how the residents of Vaikuntha choose selective prayers which are specifically suitable to glorify the Lord in terms of his, and I think the example is also given, like a sovereign king, because his position of Vaikuntha is like that of a sovereign king. And even one of the examples that are given of the Lord of Vaikuntha is that when he receives all the guests who come, just like a sovereign king, he makes all necessary arrangements for each and every one of his guests who are coming. He gives them accommodations. He gives them opulent food. He takes care of all their needs, whatever they need. When King Prataparudra is receiving all the different guests who are coming to Puri. So in the same way, Lord of Vaikuntha is like a sovereign king, and the sovereign king, whenever he receives a guest, he provides all of their necessities and makes them happy. So that's what he does in Vaikuntha. And these choice prayers and hymns which are offered to him are offered in that way, as a sovereign emperor, as if he was a sovereign emperor. And the Lord has given his servitors food, drink, appropriate accommodations, and everything else needed according to their qualification. Associates are eager to receive darshan of his lotus feet. This is all, again, the personalities who are entering Vaikuntha while Gopakumara is watching. And how their happiness is increased more and more in their service by performing dancing and singing. Such pastimes were manifest because the Lord is Lakshmipati, and such pastimes manifest complete opulence and godhood. Some of the personalities who came left their paraphernalia and families outside the city, entering alone. Some merged their associates, paraphernalia, and opulences within themselves and entered the city like possessionless sages immersed in meditation. I'm not going to explain it. Describe it, that's all. Some repeatedly assumed many different wonderful forms, such as becoming animals, birds, trees, and other wonderful forms, with amazing ornaments and bodily features. And they were engaged in playful pastimes appropriate to their form. They all accepted various worshipable forms. Now please remember, these are worshipable forms. Why are they worshipable forms? Because they are Satchitananda. They're full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. But what are these forms? These forms are human beings, monkeys, demigods, demons, sages. And this is an example of the forms that they assumed. Now, why do they assume those forms? That's not answered here, why they assume those forms. It's answered later by Narada Muni, because the reason why Narada Muni answered it is because when he was talking to Gopakumar, he understood that Gopakumar was also bewildered by what he saw at the gate. And therefore, rather than waiting for Gopakumar to ask the question, Narada Muni told him why he was seeing all of these forms. He explained it. Explained it all. And because Gopakumar himself was also particularly, I mean, that was his introduction to Vaikuntha. You know, it's like, you know, Vaikuntha 101. I guess you have to be in America to know what 101 means. I'm not sure if it's understood by everyone else. 101 is usually the first, and when you go to college and you take the first course, introductory course, I remember I took Psychology 101 when I studied in the university. It's the first introductory course to psychology. And then you go to Psychology 101, and then next is, I don't know, I didn't take the next one. I didn't like psychology, so. But it's Vaikuntha 101. It's the introduction to Vaikuntha. And that's what happened to Gopakumar. When he was sitting on the gates, he got introduced in Vaikuntha 101. And Narada Muni saw or understood what was going on in Gopakumar's heart, and he explained it. So I'll read what Narada Muni said about it. But first, let me continue. There's not much left, a little bit left, of what he saw coming in. He saw that some looked like Indra, Chandra, Surya. No, I missed one. Some adopted the conduct of those practicing Varnashram Dharma. Some bore stamped symbols and other signs related to Diksha. Some looked like Indra, Chandra, Surya, Agni, Vayu, and other demigods, meaning they only adopted these forms. It is not possible for the residents of Vaikuntha to really become human beings, monkeys, demigods, etc. They're not monkeys. They're not human beings. They're not demigods. In fact, in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, in commentary, and in the verses in Lagu Bhagavatamrita describing Vaikuntha, it describes how there are different shells, S-H-E-L-L-S. There are different places of dwelling where different personalities live. And in one shell, all the personalities who dwell in that shell, they have forms like demigods. And they're not demigods. They're Vaikuntha residents, but they assume forms like demigods because the Lord for the Lord's pleasure. The Lord likes to see all these unlimited varieties, and he relishes these different varieties of forms that exist. I mean, and not only that, what to speak of, the point is made also in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that all the different forms and all the different species and everything that we see here in this world is simply a reflection of the spiritual world. I mean, sometimes I there's a lot of spiders around here. And sometimes I look at these spiders and I was thinking that these spiders are just simply reflections. And Sanatana Goswami explains later on, he said, not only spiders, he says that even worms, he said, even the residents of Vaikuntha assume bodies of worms, birds, insects, reptiles. They're not birds, worms, monkeys, insects, or reptiles, but they're just all those different forms have their eternal existence in the spiritual world. And everything here just has it's just a reflection. Now, why do they exist in the spiritual world? Because there's unlimited variety in the spiritual world. Shouldn't they exist? And therefore, sometimes these residents of Vaikuntha, they become attracted to assume a particular form. Why? We'll talk about that later, because that's Narada Muni's answer to Gopa Kumara. But what Baladeva Vijayabhushan explained in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, he says that the forms of the demigods who are in that particular shell in Vaikuntha, that the demigods of the material world, they worship those forms. That's their worship. They worship those forms that are similar to themselves, but they're residents of Vaikuntha. They're worshipable by the demigods. It's there. It's in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. Accept it. Some had three eyes, four heads, four arms, eight arms, and 1,000 heads. And then the last point of these verses that in Vaikuntha 101 is that these forms do not have the defects of vast gradation of hierarchy. In other words, it's not, you know, this monkey form, this cow form, this is, you know, it's just, no, there's no hierarchy. It's all from a platform of non-enviousness, as we described before, and where there's non-enviousness, the service of one is always appreciated by another. And nobody is considered to be better, performing better service because of a particular form that they assume by that better service, such as Vaikuntha. Little bit of Vaikuntha. That was my summary of, rather than, as I said, reading all the verses between text 30 to 41, I summarized them with some of the points from the commentaries. Now, I'm going to read just a little bit more, and I hope I can answer the question, which is, why these forms? Why? I mean, to some degree, we've talked about why, because it's just the variety of the spiritual world, and because all the different varieties of the spiritual world are simply meant to enhance the Lord's pleasure. But Narada Muni, as we said, he saw in Gopa Kumara the need. He saw in him the need to explain what Gopa Kumara had previously seen. And therefore, by his own choice, he started to explain to Gopakumar. I'm going to read the verses. I'm going to read some of the commentaries. Narada said, this is text 139 of this chapter. Don't think that the flocks of animals and birds of this place, or the trees, creepers, bushes, grass, and other vegetation are made from earth like ordinary creatures in the mode of ignorance. Purport. In Vaikuntha, Gopakumar saw many animals like cows, horses, elephants, birds like doves, cuckoos, trees, bushes, and creepers like mandaras and kundas, and seemingly inauspicious creatures like insects and worms. He would have been wrong to think that these were inferior living beings born into bodies covered by the mode of ignorance. They were not degraded like the living beings of the material world that assume bodies made of the element earth. Text 140. In fact, these are all personal associates of Sri Krishna, all with spiritual Sat-Chit-Ananda bodies. They have assumed such forms to taste the ecstasy of serving the Lord in various ways. Purport. These Vaikuntha-vasis choose to play such roles as animals and birds to increase the variety of Lord Narayan's pleasure. And they also want to share in that pleasure. Thus the birds, bees, trees, and creepers described by Lord Brahma in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when he tells of his own experience of Vaikuntha, are not ignorant creatures like the corresponding species of life in the material world. Text 41. They have assumed forms with colors and shapes similar to those of the Lord they have worshipped as most dear. Purport. This verse indicates that Vaikuntha devotees who appear in non-human forms, such as those of some animal or plant, have worshipped similar forms of Lord Narayan, who by his expansion appeared in those same species. It's actually described that the Lord appears in as many forms as there are species of life. So, as appears in his form of a boar, appears in the form of a tortoise, you know, appears in a form of a fish. These are some of the different, but Bhagavatam describes that to describe all the different forms the Lord appears in is impossible. It's like trying to count the waves of the ocean. It's not possible to describe all these different forms. But he appears in as many forms as there are species of life. So here, this verse indicates that Vaikuntha devotees who appear in non-human forms, such as those of some animal or plant, have worshipped similar forms of Lord Narayan, who by his expansion appeared in those same species. These devotees, each in his own way, have realized the perfection of Sarupya, having attained forms that look just like those of the Supreme Lord. I'm not going to explain. It's because the first thing that happens is we try to explain it, and you try to understand it, and I try to understand it, is we start thinking about these forms. This is the Lord, he appears in his form, and Sarupya means to adopt a form that the Lord had appeared in, like being a fish, being a vine, being a this. what the mind does, you know, is the mind just, it starts, you know, if we're not careful, we may challenge it, why? But having heard all previously, at least the different places and abodes that we described, of which Gopa Kumar had visited, and all the residents of those abodes and the opulences of those abodes, and the forms adopted by residents of those abodes, it's not difficult to accept that if that even exists in the material world, that's the material world, because Gopa Kumar experienced all these things even before he got through the Mahakalapur and entered into the other side, and entered into Vaikuntha. He saw all these different varieties in the material world. Why shouldn't they exist in spiritual world, in Vaikuntha? That's at least an attempt at a logical approach, but we cannot understand simply by mundane logic. And sometimes we just have to accept. But there's more. Next verse. Having each attained sameness with a particular form of the Lord, they have gained the opulences of various kinds of bodies, as sages, demigods, fish, tortoises, human beings, and mystic seers. Text 143. Some have become hogs, man-lions, or dwarfs. Some have three eyes, four arms, or thousands of eyes like the Mahapurusha. Some have assumed bodies with thousands of faces, or with features like such deities as the gods of air and fire. Some have four arms, or eight, or 12, or more, and various kinds of dress, ornaments, symbols, and other attributes. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.11-12 describes the residents of Vaikuntha as appearing similar to the Supreme Lord and having varied bodily colors. And then in the commentary, it states, the inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planets have a glowing sky bluish complexion. Their eyes resemble lotus flowers. Their dress is of yellowish color, and their bodily features are very attractive. They adjust the age of growing youths. They all have four hands. They are nicely decorated with pearl necklaces, with ornamental medallions, and they all appear effulgent, some like coral, diamonds, or white lotus fibers in complexion. On their heads and necks, they have garlands, and they wear shining earrings. Through texts 144 through 147, Narada depicts in some detail this variety of bodily form, dress, and so on. Some Vaikuntha devotees appear as human beings because of having attained sarupya, likeness in form with such incarnations of the Lord as Sri Raghunath. Other appears as munis by sarupya with sage incarnations like Sri Kapiladev, or as demigods by sarupya with Manvantara avatars like Lord Satyasena and Lord Vibhu. Others appear as rishis by sarupya with incarnations like Sri Parashuram, or as fish by sarupya with Lord Matsya, or tortoises with Lord Kurma. Some who worship Shiva or Brahma as a representative of the Supreme appear in bodies with three eyes or four heads. Some appear like Indra, with a thousand eyes, like Ananta Shesh with thousands of heads, or like Surya or other demigods. Vedic scriptures like the Indra Shrutis, the mantras glorifying Indra, support such worship of demigods as representatives of the Supreme Lord. In the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we also find demigods like Surya being worshipped as representatives of the Lord in Plakshadweep and other divisions of the Bhur Loka planetary system. There's more. I'm going to stop there. I didn't get to, I was going to read the description of Vaikuntha, of given by Lord Brahma to the demigods. That's from the third canto of the Bhagavatam. But in that description, Lord Brahma pretty much describes a lot of the same, he describes the flora, he describes the trees, the vines, the flowers, the bees, the insects, how they are all seen upon entering into Vaikuntha. And because Vaikuntha cannot exist of anything of earthly nature, it cannot be, they're not insects, they're not bees, they're not vines. They're Satchitananda forms. And if we ask, well, who would want to become such a form? That's why Narada Muni explained, those who worshipped a particular form of the Lord, which he assumed at one time or another, in that particular form, in one of his incarnations, and they worshipped that form, and because they perfected their lives in worship of that form, therefore they assumed that form in Vaikuntha, and it wasn't a form which was going to be, nobody's going to spray. What do you call it? I forget what you call it when you're killing insects.
Spraying machine.
A spraying machine. Nobody's going to spray the insects in Vaikuntha and take care of them. They're not pests. They're not disturbances. They're there to manifest the unlimited varieties of Vaikuntha. And nobody thinks themselves superior. As we said, there's no hierarchy. It's not that those who are in the form of four arms are thinking, these bees are a nuisance. Their life is not as significant as our lives, and such as that exists in this earthly sphere. It just, what was it? I saw a word there, but it flashed. Can you put it up again? Pesticides, yes, thank you. Pesticides. There are no pesticides in Vaikuntha. Because everybody's service is equal. It's equal. And nobody's seen as a pest. And so it's inconceivable. I'm just simply trying to take advantage of Lord Brahma's statement to the demigods, where he says specifically, it is very much regrettable that unfortunate people do not discuss the description of the Vaikuntha planets, but engage in topics which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence. Yeah. Well, certainly mundane topics bewilder one's intelligence, but transcendental topics, although it may bewilder our mundane intelligence, it's purifying also our mundane intelligence, because it's the absolute truth. So, which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence, those who give up the topics of Vaikuntha and take to talk of the material world are thrown into the darkest region of ignorance. And there's no need to describe such abodes in this presentation. They're also already described in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, and very nicely described of the description of the hellish planets. And and what goes on there. So I've covered the gates of Vaikuntha in all of these verses. And then when we resume, we will resume on text 44, which is not really the gates, it's describing Vaikuntha. I guess they change when they wish. Yes, they do. That's exactly stated. In whenever they want to, they can change. They're not committed eternally to those forms. They can't change. They're free to choose whenever it's suitable and whenever it serves a particular purpose. And yes, that's also mentioned in one of Sanatana Goswami's commentaries. Yeah. So we'll begin on next time with text 44. Thank you. And I will chant some japa for a little while. And I don't know for how long, but for a little while. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasiddhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for joining and for chanting with us. And we will, next class in English will be on, what's today?
Saturday.
Class will be on Wednesday. Same time.
Monday. That's right.
Yes. Wednesday is in Russian. Yeah, Monday is in English. Thank you very much. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasiddhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare
Krishna,
Hare Hare Krishna, Hare Hare Krishna, Hare Hare
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.